You are listening to Business Executive Radio, EXE, broadcasting live from the beautiful city club of Buckhead. Ladies and gentlemen, we present for your delight today a Pilot House production of the SME Showcase of Atlanta show, where we make thought leaders visible in the hosted talk radio show tradition. I am executive producer and your announcer today, Heather Thompson, along with our host, Rio Orvec. We welcome you to the Risk, Compliance, and Governance episode with headline speaker Christopher Castia and guest speakers David Falgu, Julietta Smith, and listeners, as we refer to each visual in the show today, please bring up our speakers' documents at pilothouseadvisors.com and click on the SME Papers tab and select the episode Risk, Compliance, and Governance, November 2014. Also, before leaving our show, please vote for your favorite SME speaker today on the SME Awards tab on our website. Let me now introduce the host of our show, Rio Orvec.
Good day, everyone. This is the SME Showcase of Atlanta show, Risk, Compliance, and Governance episode, and I am your host, Rio Orvec. We are covering today several topics that are key and critical to our listening audience, covering embracing the challenges of compliance, which are always changing and becoming more frequent in today's business environment, complemented with a topic of how to help solve these issues and challenges through driving an effective compliance program. We have in the studio today top thought leaders in the area of risk, compliance, and governance. Our headliner for today's show is Christopher Castia from Homrick Berg. Welcome, Christopher.
Thank you.
And also joining us in the studio today is David Falgu from Crawford Company. Thank you for joining us, David. We are proud to present our next speaker, subject matter expert Julietta Smith, from a large global asset management firm here in Atlanta. A warm greeting this morning.
Thank you.
And on behalf of our listeners, thank you all for joining us today. Let's hear about our headline speaker, Mr. Christopher Castia. Heather, if you please.
Christopher Castia has 20 years of experience in the investment industry and has served as the Chief Compliance Officer of Homrick Berg since 2008. Chris is also an elected official serving on the City Council of Woodstock, Georgia since 2006.
Thank you, Heather. And now let's meet our headliner, Christopher. Your contribution on one of our topics today is driving an effective compliance program. So we will lead into your first question would be, what is a compliance program?
Thank you. A compliance program is a system of processes designed to achieve compliance with a rule or a law. These processes can be automated or manual, but should generally be embedded in the normal business processes of a firm. For Homrick Berg, we are governed by the Advisors Act of 1940, but what I'm going to discuss can apply to any business with a regulator or government mandate. Now, each program will vary based on the profile and business model of a firm. However, there are key elements of an effective compliance program that will be consistent across all firms. What I'm going to discuss are the basic elements, but there can be many more depending on the size and scope of the business.
Thank you for that. And can you explain, Christopher, more about the elements of an effective compliance program?
Sure. The first element is a business review, followed by a risk assessment, followed by developing written procedures, then a communication plan, a training plan, testing, and the seventh element and final element is reporting.
And if that's the case, why is a culture of compliance so important, and how do you foster this culture?
Great question. I'm going to start with a discussion of the the seven elements that I just mentioned. An effective program starts with a review of the business. We need for a chief compliance officer to have a thorough understanding of how the firm is structured, how does the business generate revenue and make profits, how are business development and sales efforts conducted, and what other efforts or departments are designed to support these revenue-generating activities. For a registered investment advisor, there is maintaining and further developing existing client relationships and marketing of advisory services. And the business units that support these revenue-generating activities are things like trading, investment management, research, financial planning, operations, and compliance. The next step is a risk assessment. Now, some people may refer to this as a risk inventory or conducting a risk matrix. But in preparing this risk assessment, we need to identify the risks present in a business unit. And when we identify these risks, we need to prioritize these as high, medium, or low. Now, once the risks have been identified and prioritized, we need to determine which controls are in place to mitigate these risks. And at this point, a decision should be made by the business leaders. If no control exists, we might want to focus on those first, or we may want to focus on the highest risk items first. That decision can be left to the chief compliance officer and business unit managers. But this risk assessment should definitely be done with other team members, usually starting with department managers or supervisors. It is very important to engage those closest to the front line so that a thorough risk inventory can be made. The next element is developing and maintaining written procedures. So after reviewing the business and conducting the risk assessment, it's time to develop new procedures or update current procedures. And when we do this, the procedures should be designed to first achieve compliance with the appropriate rule, and second, designed to detect and prevent violations. Just like the risk assessment, this should be done in conjunction with department managers or supervisors so that the most effective procedures can be drafted and implemented. When line supervisors have contributed to the finished product, there is generally immediate buy-in. And finally, these procedures should be vetted through senior management so that we can get sponsorship and support from the highest level. The next element to an effective program is the communication plan. Simply having thoughtful and well-drafted procedures is not enough. There must be an effective communication channel to broadcast compliance items such as new policies and procedures, compliance bulletins, or other relevant information. New procedures must have their own roadshow. And I get a chuckle internally from senior management when I talk about a roadshow for a new procedure. But all kidding aside, it's a must. A great way to promote a new procedure is through the annual compliance meeting. Now, normally in an annual compliance meeting, you're going to review current policies and procedures and discuss any new regulations that are present in the business. And this is a great time to preview and introduce any new policies and procedures that have been developed. Another great tool to broadcast new procedures are special purpose compliance meetings. Now, we conduct these at Homburg Berg as single issue meetings and generally have them at the beginning of the day and serve breakfast so we get everybody to show up, and we discuss one compliance item and keep it short, 10 to 15 minute stops, and we found this is a great way to introduce a new topic. Now, the next element is training, and training goes hand in hand with communication. Once policies and procedures have been published, one-on-one or department-level training is the most effective method. This is an important step, as the communication plan is not enough. An effective program will have a training component. It's up to the CCO and the business managers to develop or determine the level of formality required. But as long as it's appropriate for the size and scope of your business model, then you're okay. The next element for a program is testing. And at this point, we've reviewed the business, we've analyzed the risks, we've developed or updated procedures, we've communicated these procedures, and we've trained the staff. Now we need to test the program to determine if the procedures are working. Our tests should be developed and conducted with two things in mind. First, did we follow our procedures? And second, did our procedures work effectively? The final key element to discuss today is reporting. Now, reporting to senior management is a big deal, and it's a key element to the success of a program. After we complete testing, a report should be prepared to describe the effectiveness of a program and to make any recommendations for the following year. This is an important element in getting and maintaining support and sponsorship from senior management. And this support and sponsorship is the main ingredient in creating and fostering a culture of compliance. And that culture of compliance is the glue that holds everything together. Now, you asked how to develop and foster that, and what is a culture of compliance? Well, the culture of compliance is living a core set of values that includes consistent and ethical decision-making and doing what is right every time. This culture begins with the firm leadership and lets everybody know this is how we operate. At times, you will hear regulators discuss the tone from the top, and this is what they mean. And when this culture, this core set of values and consistent ethical decision-making is present throughout the firm, then a compliance program becomes a highly effective compliance program. And this culture must be there, or else the program will not work as designed. Now, there are many ways to foster a culture of compliance. The main ingredient that I've found over the years is to get CEO support in a public manner. What I like to do during our annual compliance meeting is throw a question to our CEO and let him discuss a personal experience. It goes a long way in demonstrating the importance of the program. Another thing I do is send blast emails to all of our employees, and I will discuss a real-world example of certain SEC sanctions of other investment firms and how an element of our compliance program would have prevented this sanction from occurring. The important theme in fostering the culture is a public discussion of the importance of a culture of compliance.
Thank you very much, Christopher, for that in-depth summary of culture of compliance and how to create a program. And coming up next, we will hear from an International Association for Risk and Compliance, the IARCP. And when we return, we will get into the compliance program's anthill with David Falgo from Crawford & Company. So stay tuned to the SME Showcase of Atlanta.
Stay current. Make informed decisions by joining the International Association of Risk and Compliance Professionals, IARCP. As the global marketplace intensifies to be a more competitive environment, specialized knowledge is a matter of survival, and developing a personal competitive advantage, your brand, is crucial. Also, online reputation management has become a very important aspect. Establish yourself as an expert in the area of risk and compliance through a lifetime membership in IARCP, which includes impression management, online identity, and reputation management. The IARCP offers both certified risk and compliance professional training, as well as certified information systems risk and compliance professional training. The International Association of Risk and Compliance Professionals offers lifetime memberships, premium memberships, a free standard membership, which includes an email newsletter. Join the IARCP. It's free and only takes a few minutes. You can find them at www.risk/compliance/association.com or simply Google International Risk and Compliance.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to the SME Showcase of Atlanta show, broadcasting on Business Executive Radio EXE from the magnificent 19th floor overlooking resplendent downtown Buckhead atop the City Club of Buckhead. Heather, we would like to know about our next speaker, David Falgo, if you would.
Through the Global Ethics and Compliance Office, David Falgu is responsible for the development, implementation, and enforcement of an organization-wide effective ethics and compliance program. He also plays a leadership role in developing a culture of integrity and establishes organizational objectives for ethics and compliance. The Ethics Office ensures conformity with applicable legal standards and best practices and implements regular training on appropriate risk and compliance issues. As Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer, David oversees investigations of alleged wrongdoing and raises and reports on ethics and compliance issues to the CEO and Audit Committee as necessary. David has been with Crawford for 8 years. He has previously practiced both private and corporate law for over 30 years. David earned a law degree as well as master's and bachelor's degrees from Tulane University in New Orleans, Louisiana. He serves as a member of the Board of Directors of Friends of the First Tee of Eastlake and currently chairs its Mentoring and Enrichment Committee.
Thank you, Heather. And David Falgu will tell us about compliance from a programmatic point of view. As Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer for Crawford, a public traded company that does business all around the world, he is responsible for the company's global ethics and compliance program. He will talk to us today about elements of corporate ethics and compliance programs and how to make those programs effective. And David, what is compliance? What does that mean?
Well, thank you. Most people think of compliance in operational terms, for example, adherence to specific regulatory requirements in a particular industry. The current ethics and compliance function for organizations, however, is a good deal broader than that in scope. In the United States, organizational ethics and compliance programs are usually measured against the elements set forth in the U.S. sentencing guidelines. At Crawford & Company, our global ethics and compliance program is based on those guidelines. The sentencing guidelines are designed to prevent and detect criminal conduct and otherwise promote an organizational culture that encourages ethical conduct and a commitment to compliance with law. Those guidelines contain 7 explicit elements, as well as a general 8th element, which is a continuous program assessment. The U.S. Department of Justice and the Securities and Exchange Commission have also weighed in over the last couple of years with guidance for programs designed to prevent corruption in organizations.
Thank you, David. And what are the elements of your program as set forth in the sentencing guidelines?
The 7 elements relate to, first, policies and procedures, second, governance and oversight, Third, proper delegation of authority. Fourth, communications and training. Fifth, detection and reporting mechanisms. Sixth, incentives and disciplinary measures. And seventh, response and prevention.
Very interesting, David. Please give us examples of how some of these elements might be implemented in an effective ethics and compliance program.
Well, it's important to note that there's no one-size-fits-all requirement in the sentencing guidelines or in the DOJ-SEC guidance. Programs should be designed and implemented so that the program is generally effective in preventing and detecting criminal conduct. In fact, the DOJ-SEC guidance has no formulaic requirements at all. Rather, they suggest asking three pragmatic questions. First, is the compliance program well designed? Second, is it being applied in good faith? And third, does it work? So with respect to the program's design, for example, the governance and oversight element requires that the organization's governing authority, in the case of Crawford & Company, that would be its board of directors, must be knowledgeable about the content and the operation of the ethics and compliance program and exercise reasonable oversight with respect to the program's effectiveness. Now, such oversight would include ensuring that adequate resources and appropriate authority are available to the individuals who are responsible for managing the program. Policies and procedures at Crawford & Company are arranged in a hierarchy. Our foundational document is our Code of Business Conduct and Ethics. The code is based on our company's articulated values, is translated into 10 languages, and is distributed to all employees in printed booklet form as well as in electronic form. Every employee is required annually to certify that they have read the code, understand it, and agree to comply with it. Next in the hierarchy are what we call our global policies. These policies are applicable to all of our businesses and personnel worldwide. They pertain to subjects like anti-corruption, antitrust, and data protection. Finally, we have operational policies and procedures that are customized to particular business unit requirements or to local laws and regulations where business is being conducted. Likewise, the communication and training element should be designed to accommodate the particular circumstances of an organization. A company in a highly regulated industry will likely have different training protocol than one with a relatively unregulated industry. Certainly, the geographic footprint of a company's business will dictate to some degree the design of a training program. For example, because Crawford & Company does business in about 70 countries around the globe, we use primarily an online training model translated into several languages that is supplemented with targeted live training when and where feasible.
Thank you very much for that. And you mentioned that the DOJ and SEC want to know if the ethics and compliance program is being applied in good faith. What does that mean?
It means that the government is looking for something more than a paper program. Policies and procedures are, of course, a critical element of an effective program, but so is tone at the top and communication, and methods of speaking up within an organization without fear of reprisal or retaliation. What this all boils down to in a single word is culture. It's critical for a corporate culture to be created in which employees and customers and investors as well believe that ethics and integrity are taken seriously. In my view, a culture of integrity is the foundation that supports the pillars of the program elements that we've been discussing.
Well, David, how can a company build a culture of integrity?
Rio, it takes leadership, commitment, and time. In addition to addressing the seven elements discussed previously, the company must be willing to demonstrate that it values and rewards ethical behavior. For example, employees must feel like they will be protected for raising issues in good faith. Also, transparency is very important. When issues of misconduct arise, the company should quickly and effectively resolve them. Whenever possible, incidents should be used both as learning opportunities for employees and as a demonstration of the company's commitment to prevent misconduct from reoccurring. Finally, the company must give employees a sense that allegations of misconduct are not only taken seriously and resolved quickly, but also that they are resolved fairly. The concept of organizational justice is extremely important in building a culture of integrity. At Crawford & Company, our Code of Business Conduct and Ethics contains a section on managers' responsibilities for cultivating such a culture. Those responsibilities include ensuring that employees are treated with fairness and respect, encouraging employees to speak up and raise concerns about workplace issues, and cultivating a culture of ethics by, for example, adhering to the code standards at all times, promoting and appropriately communicating those standards, ensuring that employees understand and comply with those standards, supporting anyone who in good faith reports a suspected violation, and never allowing retaliation against someone who in good faith reports suspected wrongdoing.
Well, avoiding violations of law and regulatory requirements is, of course, a good thing. But is there evidence, David, of other benefits of an effective ethics and
Yes, there is. Multiple studies over the last decade have shown a significant correlation between a corporate culture of integrity and improved business performance. According to a Compliance and Ethics Leadership Council study, companies with a higher culture of integrity have a 10-year total shareholder return that is 16% higher than companies with lower integrity scores. Other studies have shown a differential in returns of nearly 40% for companies that are considered the most ethical. In addition, those studies show that employees' productivity increases by 12% if their managers exhibit ethical values and behavior.
Very interesting, David. And let's spin things a little bit more internationally. What do you see as current trends or hot topics in the world of ethics and compliance?
I think the trend of anti-corruption enforcement by the U.S. Department of Justice over the last decade or so will continue. The cost of a Foreign Corrupt Practices Act violation can be enormous. The average cost of a resolution of a corporate FCPA violation in 2013 was $80 million. What's more, in addition to the FCPA, new laws in the United Kingdom, Canada, Brazil, and even China are being enforced more robustly. For any U.S. company doing business overseas, anti-corruption compliance should certainly be a focus. The hottest new topic, in my view, is the emergence of a regulatory framework that allows for so-called whistleblowers to be compensated handsomely for providing information to the government relating to corporate wrongdoing. As recently as August of this year, for example, the SEC announced a whistleblower award of more than $300,000 to a company employee who performed audit and compliance functions. In that case, the SEC affirmed that even employees who worked in the compliance function are eligible for an award if their employers fail to take appropriate and timely action on information they first reported internally. This regulatory framework makes it imperative for organizations to encourage and facilitate internal reporting of suspected wrongdoing and to build a culture in which employees believe that their concerns will be taken seriously and addressed promptly, thoroughly, and fairly.
Thank you for that, David. We'd like to take a break now and have you listen to Eastlake, a very fine charity in Atlanta.
The Eastlake Foundation of Atlanta, Georgia helps families build better lives and children reach their highest potential through its holistic approach to community revitalization, incorporating mixed income housing, cradle to college education, and community wellness. Established in 1995, the foundation turned the Eastlake community into a national model for redevelopment that has evolved into being a great neighborhood in its own right. By working with residents and expert public and private partners, the foundation now provides comprehensive programs, including the Eastlake Family YMCA and the First Tee of Eastlake, a year-round golf instruction and life skills program for area youth. People of all ages and incomes seeking a sense of community are attracted to what Eastlake readily offers. This holiday season, please join the foundation for their 11th annual toy party and silent auction at the America's Mart on December 7th from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. This holiday cocktail party and fundraiser aims to collect 5,000-plus toys for Georgia children in need. We ask that you bring a toy valued at $20 or more and a $5 donation. The silent auction will feature more than 200 items, including art, travel, dining, health and fitness, and much more. For more information, please contact Elizabeth Cuney at ekuney@eastlakefoundation.org. We're located at 2606 Alston Drive Southeast, Atlanta, Georgia 30317, and can be reached at 404-373-4351.
And you're returning to the Risk and Compliance episode of the SME Showcased Show, broadcasting on Business Executive Radio EXE. This is your host, Rio Orvec, with announcer Heather Thompson. Heather, can we hear a little bit about Julietta, our next speaker?
Yes, indeed. Julietta Smith is a senior compliance officer in fixed income at a large global asset management firm in Atlanta, Georgia. Ms. Smith's 15 years of security industry experience encompasses equity trading, insurance and financial sales, auditing, compliance supervision, compliance surveillance, compliance management, and policy development review. She is also a certified arbitrator with the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, also known as FINRA. As a senior compliance officer, Ms. Smith's role touches several facets of compliance: investment guideline reviews, monitoring of account trading activity, mutual fund launches, derivatives testing, regulatory filings, and authoring written supervisory procedures for testing and monitoring activities. A native Floridian, Ms. Smith has been residing in the Atlanta, Georgia area for 3 years and is also the founder of a nonprofit scholarship fund which targets B and C students that have experienced challenges in their lives yet demonstrate a tenacity to exceed and achieve higher learning goals.
Thank you, Heather. Now let's meet our esteemed guest. Julietta, let's have a discussion around your perspective on risk and compliance.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Julietta Smith, a senior compliance officer in fixed income with a large global financial firm located in Atlanta, Georgia. Today's discussion topic, embracing the change of compliance, can lead into many subtopics. I choose to contribute to this discussion by beginning with a high-level view of compliance and concluding with a local-level perspective. Specifically, I will discuss the role of compliance in the compliance officer, risk prevention, and disclosure in creating a positive compliance culture. The opinions I express today are of my own perspective, general industry knowledge, and professional experience, and are not representative of my firm.
And Julietta, what is the role of compliance and the compliance officer specifically?
Well, specifically, the role of compliance and the compliance officer is often misunderstood and blurred. Some believe that the role of the compliance officer is to ensure the company's business is conducted in accordance with standard business practices, while others believe the role involves ensuring that business is carried out diligently, loyally, ethically, which sometimes incorrectly translates into supervising or legal or even risk officers. There is a difference in the roles. Then there are those that believe that the role of the compliance officer is to identify and manage legal and reputational risk. In the financial sector, the role of compliance is to promulgate written procedures for ensuring activities are conducted in accordance with the law and must help to make sure these procedures are followed. Since the financial sector has been the object of federal reform, for example, Dodd-Frank, the role of the and task of compliance has grown. In viewing this from a high level, in the financial sector, federal rule requires the naming of a CCO, which was not a requirement prior to 2004. And not just the naming of any CCO, but firms must name a CCO that is knowledgeable in the laws and regulations applicable to their sector of the industry. This would be investment advisory, broker-dealer, etc. Poignant events that attributed to such reform of the CCO requirement include such events as Enron. Under the umbrella of the CCO, the compliance officer must make sure each employee is aware of the importance of compliance and respects and contributes to its implementation, analyze and reports on best practices to be implemented within the company, be familiar with the company's overall strategy, understands the potential risks in order to anticipate them. This is different from supervision, as supervisors approve daily trading of the financial advisor and or portfolio manager, and risk, which gauges the risk threshold of the firm and the legal department. Conclusively, compliance and the compliance officer can best be described as a sensor and monitor that embodies leadership, independence, charisma, integrity, communication, are human and firm.
Well, thank you, Julietta. In an ever-changing regulatory environment, the biggest challenge firms face is regulatory risk, the risk of non-compliance. How are compliance personnel going to ensure that the compliance program is reasonably designed to detect and prevent risks?
Well, there's much coming down the pipeline in terms of regulatory reform. As I mentioned before, Dodd-Frank, money market reform, that compliance is expected to remain abreast of these changes and to be experts, if not semi-experts, on all aspects of the changes. However, that is impossible. It takes a team of people to be experts. Within the compliance organization, coordination with members from different teams is key. Audit, risk, supervision, etc. Additionally, implement controls and checks that will enable a firm to be in step with regulatory changes. Let me give you an example. An example would be, let's say on the broker-dealer side, you have a branch manager that supervises the daily activity of its associates. The branch manager rolls up to a regional supervisor, which performs sample review of all of the daily activity and asks questions of the branch management team regarding activity that appears questionable. The next level is the compliance officer performing policy review and risk analysis of the activities within that branch, matching the activity against any regulatory and or state laws, thus resulting in communication to the auditing department for further research during their audit of that branch. The compliance department then determines if additional controls are required. In that simple example, Rio, you can see that there are a number of branches on that tree that must be touched to ensure a firm is in step with regulations. There are processes in place. However, it isn't unreasonable to have a program design that doesn't catch all activity. An example of this would be personal trading activity of the associates. There are policies in firms that require all associates to report their personal trading activity, and the firm receives copies of their activity. However, if a person doesn't report the activity, then even though there are controls in place, procedures in place, being yearly affirmations, training, etc., the program may not catch an unreported activity.
And what is disclosure, and what risk does non-disclosure pose to a firm, management, and registered representatives, Julietta?
Well, in the SEC's attempt to instill confidence in investors that the financial market is transparent, the SEC requires that publicly traded companies release and provide for free exchange of all material facts, that are relevant to their ongoing business operations, and that the whole truth about any material issue pertaining to the transaction is communicated. Financial firms and their compliance respond to this requirement by delivering disclosure in plain language, yet the average investor still does not understand the disclosure. Therefore, compliance, supervision, audit, take steps in training sales personnel in how to communicate to the investor, trains associates how to identify when an investor isn't understanding how the product works. The risk of a firm or registered representative of not disclosing to a client, which may result in material gain or loss, is being subject to fines, suspension, loss of license for the registered personnel, and or imprisonment.
That's very interesting, and the types of investments are becoming more complex. How does compliance stay abreast of continuing changes and the impact of regulations on them?
Well, we in compliance, we must rely on local roundtables, regional seminars, webinars, reading material, investment professionals providing training on new products, networking, and of course, outside counsel.
And Julietta, how does a firm ensure that there is a positive culture of compliance?
This has to start at the top, the uppermost level of the organization, making sure that downstream communication is open, that it's clear, and that there's a level of understanding of the role of compliance within the organization and how it affects the firm. Training helps execute this communication, as well as making people responsible for implementing a program that is easily grasped by the masses. Build a rapport with the various departments, which communicates that compliance is a partner that cares about not only the organizational framework, but the people that make up that framework. Often, compliance is seen as the police, only caring about policy, procedures, what's right, what's wrong, not being human. As a compliance officer, if you walk into a room to get coffee and people scatter or begin to whisper, I can assure you that that is a good indication that you are not on the same island as the rest of the firm.
Well, Julietta, what do you do when something goes wrong?
Well, I'll begin this answer by stating that very rarely does anyone approach a compliance or a compliance officer to request permission to do something wrong. Although those instances aren't non-existent, most associates want to do what is right and what they think is right. It doesn't always mean it is right. That said, as previously discussed, compliance officers need to be known as people to resolve an issue, a partner, and not the person that always says no. So when something goes wrong, depending on the depth of the issue, you have a conversation about the issue in a manner that doesn't make the offender feel interrogated. After the discussion, assess the risk, review the policies affected, and report the issue. From this process, a resolution that aligns with the firm's policies, industry rules, foreign industry rules, if applicable, will be delivered. If the issue brings to light an opportunity within the compliance program to be strengthened, then the proper steps to execute new policies, checks, controls should be executed. Last, a good compliance officer and compliance department will take the opportunity to train the individual or individuals. It not only shows compliance as a partner, but as a leader.
Julietta, people are naturally skeptical of compliance. How do you get people to talk to you and see you as a partner versus an adversary?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I've been on both sides of the coin. I've been in production in my financial career, where I've received questions from audit and compliance, which is typical in terms of monitoring my activity, and currently in a role in which I ask the questions. The key for me on the sales side, as well as on the compliance side, which hasn't changed, is to not be seen as the police. As a part of my job, it's to build relationships and to encourage people to understand that procedures are not superimposed on the business to complicate it, but are a part of the business. I position myself to be an individual that doesn't mind liaising between another department and the sales team. For example, traders, advisors, reps, etc. It helps the sales team get a step closer to their answer that they may not have reached as quickly by their own methods. And it communicates that I have the same goal as they have, which is to get the business for the client. In turn, the relationship fosters an understanding that when I explain a certain activity cannot be done, it isn't because I want to stop them from conducting business, but because there is a restriction, law, and or policy in place that says it cannot be done. It becomes an easier pill to swallow for the receiver, and the decision is generally met with, I understand, thanks for your help. However, that does not mean they are happy with the outcome, but they do respect me enough, my position and compliance, to find an alternative investment or strategy that is suitable for that client. Conclusively, Rio, a good compliance organization and compliance officer will be able to convince staff and even management, being board of directors, executives, that expanding business is important, but not at any price and being compliant. The firm can detect, prevent, and reduce risk while still increasing business opportunities.
Julietta, we truly appreciate your perspective on that. It was very, very well put. And now we'll take a short break to hear from a healing organization, manafund.org. And when we return, we will be talking with all of our guest speakers in the wrap-up session.
Did you know that every hour one person dies from the effect of an eating disorder? Additionally, eating disorders such as anorexia nervosa are devastating, life-threatening issues that affect 500,000 teens and their families today. Anorexia is also the number one mental health disorder that takes the lives of females from 15 to 24. Thanks to ManaFund, you can help. ManaFund is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing hope and financial aid to those seeking treatment and freedom from eating disorders. They do it by providing the funds for residential and inpatient treatment for individuals who lack or have inadequate insurance coverage. Go to manafund.org today to learn more about how you can help. www.mannafund.org.
I would like now to turn you over to a message from a very fine organization for a few moments, which helps nonprofits, and they can actually help you in making your contributions, the Georgia Center of Nonprofits. When we return, it will be time for our famous wrap-up session, where we will get a summary statement from all of our guest speakers today. Stay tuned, Atlanta.
Georgia Center for Nonprofits. There's plenty to take care of in nonprofits: business and strategic planning, finance and accounting, fundraising and development, governance and boards, human resources, leadership, management, marketing and communication, public policy and advocacy, volunteer management. For more than 20 years, GCN, Georgia Center for Nonprofits, has served as a cornerstone of support for Georgia's nonprofit and philanthropic community by delivering a wide range of services and support. Our members span the nonprofit world in scale and scope, from international organizations to corporate philanthropies, foundations, and community initiatives. The mission of Georgia's Center for Nonprofit is to build thriving communities by helping nonprofits succeed. Through a powerful mix of advocacy, solutions for nonprofit effectiveness, and insight-building tools, Georgia Center for Nonprofits provide nonprofits, board members, and donors with the tools they need to strengthen organizations that make a difference on important causes throughout Georgia. GCN membership provides comprehensive support to more than 1,200 organizations and 5,000 professionals through exclusive access to landmark research, publications, and in-depth online content, cost-saving opportunities, and events throughout the year. Become a business member and impact your community.
Returning, it's your host, Rio Orvec, with announcer Heather Thompson and our top subject matter expert speaker panel on the Risk, Compliance, and Governance episode of the SME Showcase of Atlanta. We're back in the studio with our wrap-up segment dealing with the topics of embracing the challenge of compliance and driving effective compliance programs. In our show's classic style, we'll go around the table of our distinguished subject matter experts for a short summary of their points of discussion. We will start with you, Christopher Kazia. In a few words, please highlight your thoughts, please.
Certainly. I discussed seven key elements to an effective compliance program, which are the business review, the risk assessment, communication, developing procedures, testing, training, and reporting. These are all tangible elements that require input and a high level of engagement from a number of people within the firm. It's that final intangible element, the culture of compliance, that consistent ethical decision making that makes it all work.
Thank you, Christopher, for your concise viewpoint. And now we'll turn our attention to David Falgo. David, your summary thoughts for our listeners, please.
Thank you, Rio. As we've heard today, the topic of ethics and compliance has received a good deal of attention recently. I fully expect that trend to continue. A properly organized and designed and implemented ethics and compliance program built on an organizational culture of ethics can not only protect a company from potential civil and even criminal liability, but is also likely to improve business performance through more engaged and productive employees.
Thank you, David. Your perspective can tell us that you've been well prepared and very enlightening today. And now it's Julietta. You have given us many takeaway thoughts today. Can you pull key points together, Julietta, for our listeners in a few moments, please?
Sure. I would like to say that the takeaway from my points that I would like listeners to have would be just a summation of everything that I've said. And in wrapping up everything, compliance and the compliance officer can be best described as sensors, monitors, that embody leadership, independence, charisma, integrity, communication, are human and firm, and that a good compliance organization and officer will be able to convince staff and even management that expanding business is important, but not at any cost. The firm can detect, prevent, and reduce risk while still increasing their profit.
Ladies and gentlemen, all your thought-provoking points and efforts to prepare and talk to us today are greatly appreciated. It's been great to have you in the studio today. And that brings us to a close on the Risk and Compliance Governance episode, addressing the topics of embracing the challenge of compliance and driving an effective compliance program, with stimulating and illuminating discussion points presented by our thought leaders. Headliner, Christopher Kasdia from Homrick Berg. And thank you, Christopher.
Thank you for having me.
Also, our guest speaker, David Falgo from Crawford & Company. A pleasure to have you in the studio, David.
Thank you, Rio. Happy to be here.
And our guest speaker, Julietta Smith. We appreciate your contribution today, Julietta.
It was a pleasure.
Rounding out our show, we will have an honorable mention going out today to author Gretchen Eiler for her SME paper contribution entitled The Effects of International Standards on America. Thank you, Gretchen. And thank you all for making this show possible. And listeners, please vote for your favorite speaker, show, and author on the show tab, SME Awards, on the SME Showcase website at www.pilothouseadvisors.com. Please stay tuned for a rundown of our upcoming shows and show credits. It's been my honor and privilege to host today's show and would like to leave you with a thought. There is no excuse for the lack of time. It's not lack of time. It's simply lack of direction.
We hope you have enjoyed today's program. Please join us in our next Risk and Compliance Show episode on February 25th, 2015, where we tackle the topic, governance. Is it out of control? Our first show of the new year is January 7th, 2015, introducing the episode Human Resources Today, loaded with chief people officers and HR executives from Atlanta's largest companies. And coming January 14th, the episode Emerging Technologies, addressing the popular topic, Innovative and Effective Methods in Logistics. Also in January is our popular monthly episode of Financial Capital Markets. And we are introducing a new series by executive producer Heather Thompson, which airs January 28th, the CFO Roundtable Series, unveiling the rise and fall of accounting's newest enemy. Stay tuned for our full lineup of upcoming February shows of the SME Showcase presenting the Executive Boardroom Series with the topic, The Top Three Demanding Issues Facing Executives Today, That's the executive producer Heather Thompson's Women in Leadership series. And live on the floor at FinTech in March, we feature the new show episodes, Marketing and Media, with the listener-requested topic, Social Media Effect on the Direction of Marketing, along with the CIO Leadership Series for all you technology buffs. For a full month's upcoming show announcements and requests for our listeners' auto-notification, please go to our website, www.pilothouseadvisors.com, and select the Show Schedule tab.
Listeners, don't forget, you can easily donate to any one of thousands of fabulous non-for-profits from one site, the Georgia Center for Nonprofits at www.gcn.org. All donations go instantly, directly into the nonprofit of your choice. I've tried it. I'm hoping you will. And this has been the SME Showcase of Atlanta show, making thought leaders visible. And I am your host, Rio Orvac. Good day.
We would like to thank the executive producer, Heather Thompson, executive producer and host, Rio Orvac, photographer, Joseph Rivers, the business executive radio, EXE, the wonderful hospitality of the City Club of Buckhead, production manager, Everett James, production coordinator, Whitney Adams, technical editor, Robert Grant, and all of the guests in our studio audience.
Today's show was brought to you by Pilot House Advisors, piloting their organization to your vision by transforming, optimizing, and executing. This is a Pilot House Entertainment production, all rights reserved.